Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live, we're going to talk a little bit about the eclipse. Probably everybody saw it yesterday, right? A little bit. And hopefully you were safe with your eyewear. It's really interesting looking at the sun, some of the facts about the sun. And it relates to the way God looks, too. We'll talk about that and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online, our live stream at kpcg.fm and at thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Radio Live, Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Yesterday, of course, was the event of a lifetime, I guess, the big solar eclipse here in the United States. And it was cool to look at. You said you watched some of the live feed. It was from NASA or something. I guess they played that here on the college campus of Armstrong College there in the auditorium. And so big projector. You got to see a lot of that, huh?
Yeah, that was really inspiring. They had NASA reporters pretty much on a bunch of sites down the path from Oregon. I saw one from Missouri, then from Kentucky. So they were just checking in on with each reporter along the path. And then they sort of filmed the crowd's reaction at each spot. And obviously, they'd show the eclipse, which was just unbelievable. Even just watching it on the screen, I got chills that just lasted for about a minute, which I really wasn't expecting. I almost cried just from watching on the screen. I can't imagine what it must have been like for people who were there.
Yeah, the little bit of coverage I saw, people seemed to really be moved by it. And in most places, it seems like they have a pretty decent view. I think out on the East Coast, there were some clouds, but they could still see it, sort of. So it's they were hoping for good weather, and in a lot of places, they had it. It is amazing how it affects people. I guess I don't know why. Like, I can't explain why it does. Now, if you didn't know what was happening, I could understand a lot of emotions because it would just be so terrifying. But the fact that we know why it's happening, we know it'll pass on by and we'll move on with things. But still, it's for some reason, it really does affect people, and I logically can't understand why that is. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I couldn't figure it out either. I mean, maybe just thinking about it on a spiritual level a little more. I don't know why most people would get emotional about it, though.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So maybe there's somebody out there that has that answer to it. And, of course, if you had any interesting stories about that or your experiences, you could email those to us. Comments at kpcg.fm. Happy to see those. And, oh, by the way, you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm as well. We did not live tweet the eclipse. it's happening. Just keep repeating that over and over.
That's actually funny because it was like the live stream I was watching. They're like, we're here in Eclipseville, USA, and oh, the moon's getting closer and closer to covering up the whole sun. And they just kept on saying it, and they're like, well, it'll be done in about a minute now.
Yeah, it's really hard to do play-by-play on that because everyone knows what's going to happen. Right. But you still have to try to make it interesting and exciting. And so they would pull people out of the crowd and say, well, how do you feel about it? And they were in some cases, people were talking about the country feeling unified. Mm-hmm. Because of an event like that. And so really, really quite interesting. We're going to talk more about the eclipse and look at something really interesting in the Bible related to that as well coming up later on today's program. So you're going to want to listen for that. To start today, here's a couple of headlines from thetrumpet.com. Top story today is more states are considering legalizing assisted suicide. That was a big story when it first started happening. Jack Kevorkian, I believe, was his name from my childhood. He was always on the news. He was one of the first doctors that was trying to do this. And now it says 2017 sees uptick in state legislature bills advocating physician-assisted end-of-life options. So a lot of people do look at that. They think, well, I'm getting to the end of my life. I don't feel well. I have these problems. I want to end it all. I want to choose my own way out. And so some states do allow this to happen, but it is a very hot topic in the news, and they talk about it there at thetrumpet.com today.
Yeah, that would be a hot topic because in pretty much every other case when you're talking about suicide, the idea is to prevent it any way you can. And yet when people get older, all of a sudden we're turning around and saying that we should be doing that. A good way to think about it would just be, what does God say about it? He created human life, so what does he think about assisted suicide or any kind of suicide? It's considered a murder, and so that type of option is really not a good one.
Yeah, there's a great quote here. It's from The Incredible Human Potential, which is a book we're going to talk about a little later today, but this ties into this story. And Mr. Armstrong, the author of that book, Herbert Armstrong, writes this. He says, one of God's ministers told me of experiences he has had with three successive would-be suicides. So people were wanted to kill themselves, and they wanted to talk to this minister before they did it, I guess. Each time he said to them, well, you can go right ahead and do it if you want to, but first you'd better learn what happens at the moment you die. So far as your consciousness goes, the next fraction of a second, you will wake up in the resurrection. And if you commit this self-murder, you'll still be facing all your problems and the guilt of this self-murder crime added in addition. Why not solve the problems now before you commit this murder? And he says none of the three went on with the intended suicide. And that's the truth of it. It's if you believe in the resurrection, you do have to come up and answer for what you've done in this life. And even if you're in pain and you want to get out of this life, which I think we can all feel sympathetic to somebody like that, it's still murder according to God's word.
Right, and suicide can be viewed as an escape, like, you know, I'll be dead for a long time and I'll be done with my problems, but it's like the next second of that person's consciousness, the person's alive. It's like the death never happened and yet the sins are still there, and all of a sudden that person's sitting right in front of God with an extra sin to account for. It's almost like you have just added to your burdens without even escaping them at all. You didn't actually, you know, in your own mind, because your consciousness ceased, it's like you didn't even die at all.
Yeah, and there's something sometimes to be learned from trials. I mean, nobody likes them. Nobody likes to suffer, but again, you have to think about Jesus Christ. I mean, he didn't take the easy way out. He went through the hardest way, and he had to because of what he was doing there for mankind. And so, again, I mean, I think we're all sympathetic to suffering. Nobody likes to be sick or hurt or any of those things. But when you look at what sometimes you can learn from those trials, and also the fact that whether it's doctor assisted or somebody does it on their own, it still counts as murder. It doesn't solve any problems, and you have actually more problems when you come up in the resurrection. So there's a lot to think about there. People think of this life ending physically as the end, but the Bible says that's not the end.
Exactly. And if people think that God doesn't exist, then there isn't really an authority over them to decide whether suicide is right or wrong. And in that case, humans can decide it. And of course, if there is no God, there is no afterlife at all. So there would be no need to be judged for a sin like that. So it does get back down to, does God exist? If he does, what does he say about it? And clearly he would not be in favor of suicide.
Absolutely not. No. And that would, if people looked at the Bible and they understood the process of this life and then resurrection and the judgment, which is all spelled out very clearly in the Bible, and then this great book we're going to talk about at the end, Incredible Human Potential, wouldn't it change the way that terrorists think? Now, granted, if you're a terrorist, you don't believe in the Bible in most cases. A lot of it's coming from the Islamic world, but they have a different belief. They think, well, I'm going to kill myself and I'll be rewarded for that. That's nowhere in the Bible. And of course, they're not looking at the Bible. But nevertheless, the truth of the Bible is not only would you be guilty for all the murders that you committed in that last attack, you're guilty for your own death. And so you're going to have to. Now, God's obviously going to be merciful and give people a chance to learn the truth and change. But still, they'll be responsible for those things they did. See, people don't think about it that way in this world. And that's why you have a problem like terrorism, because they think it's, you know, it's the here and now, and then they have some paradise waiting for them for committing these atrocious acts. completely opposite to God's way of thinking.
Especially when you consider that Earth is the proving ground for human beings, and we are supposed to be proving ourselves to God in this physical life before the spiritual life starts. Suicide really is the ultimate form of quitting in this life, and so how can God trust people who are quitters? That's just the extreme version of quitting, and clearly that's not going to grade well for people who have done that.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting story here at thetrumpet.com, top story today. More states consider legalizing assisted suicide, and it's a tough situation because there's obviously the moral dilemma. And if people aren't sure on what the truth of the matter is, and they have a, you know, a doctor or professionals there saying, no, no, this is fine. Well, people might be convinced that it's fine, but not according to the Bible. Suicide's a big issue in the United States in general. Just looking at the whole topic, each year 34,598 people die by suicide. That's an average of 94 completed suicides every day, if you can believe that. So today in this country, on average, there'll be 94 suicides. That's a terrible, terrible stat. More people die by suicide than by homicide in the United States. 18,361 die in homicide. So almost double, not quite. Suicide is the 11th leading cause of death across all ages. And so it is a big issue in a lot of ways in the West. The most blessed nation on earth, the United States, and yet still lots of people are very depressed and very hopeless. And there's no need for that, but that's the way a lot of people feel.
Right, and now we're trying to take it to a level where we organize suicide by giving doctors the power, and it's almost like a sick fetish for deciding whether someone lives or dies. I mean, abortion's like the same thing, where why would you ever side with death over life if you could choose life and you could have an opportunity to either nourish a life and bring it along or to extend your own life, not by, you know, being hooked up to IVs and being unconscious, but, you know, at least learning more from this life as you can through those trials.
Yeah, and then this whole, I mean, the whole thinking about assisted suicide is, it also gets rid of the healing promise that God has. What about healing people? Have people been healed before to where, boy, all hope looked lost, and then they lived on? Oh, that's happened. It does happen sometimes, so There's a lot there when you start looking at God's word, where you say, wait a second, this is going the wrong direction here, and so it's a good write up to look at there. More states consider legalizing assisted suicide at thetrumpet.com, and related to that article by Dennis Leap, the truth about suicide, which gets into a lot of God's thinking on it, and that's what we need. Man has a lot of thoughts about a lot of things. You can find any thought pretty much you want out there. But the question is, what does God think about it? And that's written up there in the truth about suicide also.
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting topic, or at least something that I would like to read about. I haven't got to read that article yet, but it's something that obviously we all need to consider it, because I think we've seen in this society now, we can pretty much justify any action if we don't look at what God says about it. And it's even to the level of mass murder, on a scale, like organized mass murder, but somehow it's fine because it's within a doctor's office, and that's not really how it should go.
Yeah, so really interesting right up there. Also, I'll make sure this is for the Trumpet daily radio program that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, and listen for that show today as well, covering some of the main headlines and also getting into a book by Herbert W. Armstrong, The Missing Dimension in Sex. And so talking about that book a little bit. So make sure you listen for that program. As we were mentioning earlier, the big eclipse happened here recently. Everyone was very excited about that. And it was a real amazing phenomenon that people don't see too often in life, especially a complete eclipse. The sun is an amazing star. And here's some stats about it. And I think we think about the sun a little more when you have eclipses, because we have a chance to sort of look at it if we do it safely. And you never get to look at the sun because it'll burn you. But it's an amazing thing. The sun accounts for 99.86% of the mass in the solar system. That's most of the mass, if my math is correct. It has a mass of around 330,000 times that of the Earth. It is 3/4 hydrogen, and most of its remaining mass is helium. So massive, massive in comparison to the Earth.
That is really incredible. And if you're talking about a solar eclipse, a complete solar eclipse. The moon is so tiny in comparison to the sun, and yet somehow the moon is able to block the sun out. That's even talked about in that booklet we have, Our Awesome Universe Potential, which is also on thetrumpet.com. Just the fact that that is possible, and we're able to even observe more about the sun while the moon is in the way, because while the moon is in the way, you see the sun kind of casting off these flames, and there's gases being thrown around, and you could see the sun shining through the peaks and valleys of the moon. It's actually, we're in this perfect position in the universe where we can observe the sun and learn more about it.
Yeah, it's really, yesterday when I went outside, and I think here in Edmond, Oklahoma, it was about 105 was the peak time for the eclipse, and we didn't have a total one, but it was still, you know, pretty decent. And it was light enough. It was kind of like heading to twilight. That's the way it felt, and or it looked. And it was cooler and more comfortable. And I thought, I told my wife, I was watching it with my wife and my daughter, and I said, I want a planet that's like this all the time. It's warm, but it's not. I'm not burning. I'm not being burned by the sun's rays. It felt great, and I thought if I could just keep it there. I'm sure there's reasons we shouldn't do it that way, but it was amazing how just blocking out a portion of the sun and the direct rays not hitting you anymore, the temperature shifted very dramatically. I mean, in the way it felt to me anyway. I don't know exactly what the degrees were, but you felt it immediately for that minute or so, and then of course you get scorched again. But that was a great moment in time. I really like that temperature.
Yeah, and the visual we got was almost like the difference between being outside and looking around and then putting on sunglasses and looking at the same things. It was clearly a lot darker, and it seemed like maybe some things I had a harder time like kind of picking them out in the distance, just because it was a lot harder to see. It was obviously a more obscure type of light. And it just really was fascinating to see that. And the fact that if you did ever glance up, which I foolishly did a couple times at the sun, you don't see the moon blocking it.
Right.
The sun is so bright, it just shines right through the moon, unless you're actually, I guess, in the path of totality there.
Yeah, amazing amount of power coming off the sun and brightness. The temperature inside the sun can reach 15 million degrees Celsius, a touch warmer than my house in the afternoons during smart hours. Energy is generated through nuclear fusion in the sun's core, and this is when hydrogen converts to helium. And because objects generally expand, the sun would explode like an enormous bomb if it wasn't for its tremendous gravitational pull. So you've got to have all these perfect forces working together to make this amazing sun work. The sun generates solar winds. These are ejections of plasma, extremely hot charged particles that originate in the layer of the sun known as a corona. Don't think about beer. And they can travel through the solar system at up to 450 kilometers per second. Just amazing, the temperature, the brightness, the power of it all. And, I mean, it's an amazing phenomenon to see it. And we have to be, like you said, we have to be in the exact right place to not be burned up by it here on this Earth. And it just, the power is overwhelming. The size is overwhelming compared to the Earth. And when I was looking at this yesterday, it did make me think about God, because the Bible talks about God's face shining like the sun. And we want to look a little bit about at God's appearance and then see how we're going to look too. And that's talked about in The Incredible Human Potential.
Yeah, that I think that might be a reason why so many people, even without knowing, get so emotionally caught up in that. I mean, obviously, there was that Sun Also Rises radio program on this station recently that talked about a war back in 585 BC actually stopping, a war between the Medes and the Lydians that had been going on for over 5 years. And yet, because there was a total solar eclipse in the sky during one of their battles, they all just put down their weapons, looked up, started weeping, started screaming, started kneeling down on the ground and praying. That's kind of the effect that it seems to have on a lot of people. And maybe that's why, because there is so much depth to seeing something like that. It's a clear and obvious miracle that we can be positioned in this location to even be able to see it. But the fact that the sun, when we see it so clearly around the moon like that, it does look like God does, and that's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, and one of the big things with the eclipse, and the reason I kind of thought about this was you know, we all think, oh, we got to be careful when we look at it. We have to have these special glasses. So thankfully I had some special glasses and I trusted them. So I hope they were right. And so you can look up and you can see it. And if you don't have glasses, even during an eclipse, you'll damage your eyes because of how powerful the sun is. So right up here from the Washington Post, 20 seconds of burning, friends partly blinded after watching solar eclipse warn of dangers. This happened years ago. This was way back in the 60s. These two guys that were high school kids in Oregon, their teacher told them there was going to be a partial eclipse. And so they said, oh, great, let's go take a look. They didn't have glasses. They didn't know. They went out and looked at it for about 20 seconds, kind of squinting and then like changing eyes. And both of them had eye damage, not completely blind, but eye damage from those 20 seconds. And it just shows you the power of the sun. We can't even look at it, even in an eclipse, for a short amount of time without damaging our eyes.
Right. And like yesterday, I looked up for probably less than a second twice. And the other time that I looked at it longer, I actually had glasses, thankfully, yeah, that I was able to track down. But for like 20 minutes after that, I had black spots just dancing all across my vision. Thankfully, it's totally gone now, and my vision was not the best to begin with. but it does show you that there is a lot of power there, and the fact that it can, it's almost the entire mass of the solar system, and the fact that it can shine to such a distant planet does show you that that's not something you want to look at directly.
No, and so in looking at this, eclipse yesterday and thinking about how, boy, if I didn't have these glasses, I couldn't even look at it. I thought of Exodus 33 and 34. This is an account here of Moses, and he's up talking to God. He's on Mount Sinai there, and he asks God, you know, if he can see him. You know, can I take a look at you? This is a fascinating history, and, you know, you don't hear people talk about it too much, but here's a man that is talking to God. He is talking to him. And he asks him, can I see you? Which is a normal question I think anybody would probably ask. I was always impressed by how bold Moses was. He would just ask questions. I'd be like, wow, should you ask that? But he just went ahead and asked.
Exactly. And other times he even saved the nation from annihilation by saying, oh, okay, just God, please hold on for a second.
Yeah.
They obviously went off track here, but just please try to have some mercy. And then God actually did listen to him because he had that meekness but that boldness at the same time.
Yeah, and there's other passages where, you know, people were being critical of Moses in Israel there, and they got corrected, and God said, I speak to him face to face. Like, and that doesn't happen often. So he was setting the record straight. But so anyway, Exodus 33 here, and just to read it to you in verse 22, it says, and God said, okay, you know, you can see me. He said, and it shall come to pass while my glory passes by. So he's going to walk by him. Or whatever he does, he moved by him in some way. And he said, I will put you in a cleft of a rock, and I will cover you with my hand while I pass by. So, you know, I was thinking about it. We're wearing these glasses trying to look at this eclipse. And it kind of reminded me of that, like God passing by and just putting his hand there. Mm. And then God said, well, I'll let you see my back. You can't see me on my face. And so he did. And Moses saw that amazing sight.
Yeah, and obviously it was God's hand. It was not just anyone's hand. It's same with like the glasses, how it had to be those specific types of glasses, not just any type of sunglasses, because even regular sunglasses would have damaged our eyes. It does just give you a glimpse of the power as well. And then, of course, in Revelation, it talks about other features of God that are just outstanding. But here we're just talking about the brightness, and that alone is incredible.
Yeah. So he gives, continuing with this history here, he gives, then of course, Moses the Ten Commandments, which shows you how important those are. And then, but so he comes down from the mountain, and people are afraid of him, which is so strange to me. Verse 30 says of Exodus 34, when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come by him. And it's always, I'm like, well, I mean, I know we get suntans, right? But no one's ever afraid of you. So this is different. Like something happened here where I've seen people been like, wow, that guy's really sunburned, but it's never scared me unless it was me. I didn't like it. But there's something different here. And so there's some commentaries that have different thoughts about it. And one says that the skin of his face shone at this time of his being in the mount, he saw more of the glory of God, which having with open face beheld, he was in some measure changed into the same image of God. This was a great honor done to Moses, that the people might never again question his mission or think or speak slightly of him. He carried his credentials in his very countenance. And so some people say that maybe he's shown like this always. I don't know that that's true. I'm not sure on that. Some of this is speculation, but it's just interesting to see what some of these commentaries say. He had God's countenance kind of in his own countenance, which was amazing.
Right, and I guess you mentioned there were like horns coming off of his face because they were so bright. It was like a physical object was coming off
of
him.
Well, something they say, another commentary says, and again, you know, this is a little bit, this is just kind of, it's just interesting, I'll say that. It says, the skin on his face shone, and if you look at the Hebrew word there, I believe it's pronounced Karan, K-A-R-A-N, something like that. It means horn. He was horned. And they say, having been long and familiar a discussion with his maker, his flesh as well as, well, his flesh anyway, they say, was penetrated with the effulgence, it's the first time I've ever said that word, of the divine glory. And his looks expressed the light and life which dwelt within. Probably Moses appeared now as he did when, in Christ's transfiguration, he was seen with Elijah in the mount, Matthew 17. They had that vision. So I think he might have looked similar to that. As the original word signifies, to shine out, to dart forth, as horns on the head of an animal or rays of light reflected from a polished surface, we may suppose that the heavenly glory which filled the soul of this man darted out from his face in light generally, you know, refracting or coming out in some fashion. So it was scary to people anyway and fascinating to look at.
It clearly changed Moses' life in many ways, even just his physical appearance and the fact that he probably would have been blinded or died if he had seen God's face or hadn't had his face partially covered by God's hand. It just shows you that, well, thankfully God was being merciful to him, of course, but also that there is a lot of just splendor there and glory and majesty. And Mr. Armstrong wrote all the time, Mr. Herbert Armstrong, who wrote The Incredible Human Potential, he always said that the spiritual realm is more real than the physical. When you have stories like that, and then even a whole nation of millions of people can see just by one person who was in contact with God how brilliant God is, and they get even afraid of Moses because of what he looks like, it really does show you that the spiritual realm is a lot more real.
Yeah, and some commentaries said that maybe, you know, this was one of the reasons that he lived as long as he did, and because his eyes weren't diminished, like he was strong, and he was up in his hundreds. Mm-hmm. So I know people lived a little longer at times back then, but still, his strength wasn't diminished. So they think maybe this had something to do with it. Obviously, he was fulfilling God's plan, but this whole encounter really did affect his life in an amazing way, and he took on some of God's glory, which is really stunning to read about.
Yeah, what an opportunity that must have been for him, and the fact that he even asked, I would probably be afraid to ask something like that. I would want to ask it, but maybe not actually do it, just because maybe I would think he'd get angry or something.
Yeah, right.
But Moses had the boldness to do that, and clearly it was a good question to ask because God just gave it to him.
Yeah, really amazing. And, you know, I was thinking too about how if we're out in the sun too long, well, it's bad. You get burned, you can get cancer, you know, that's a big thing. Nothing like that here. This was, nothing harmed him. Mm-hmm. This was a good thing. And it was coming out of him to the point where, even if you read on a little further there in Exodus, for a while anyway, when he went in to talk to God, he would take the veil down from his face and talk to him. And then he'd go back out and put this veil back up because the people were afraid of him. And so, I mean, it's just fascinating to look at that. And in here, we see this eclipse yesterday, and we've got to put on these really special glasses to even get a glimpse of the sun. But that's what God looks like. But even more so, Revelation 1, as you mentioned, talks about how his face shines like the sun in its full strength, not an eclipse. And that's the God we're talking about here.
And I do believe there are bigger suns than the one we have. So there, it could be talking about a sun that may be millions of times bigger than our sun, and yet we can hardly even imagine anything bigger than the sun that we saw yesterday that was perfectly encircling the moon. You could just barely see the edges of the sun all the way around the outside. I actually did. I found that quote from Our Incredible Universe Potential about how the eclipse is just a total miracle. It says here, another wonderful factor that improves our understanding of the heavens is the presence of perfect solar eclipses. It's extraordinary that our gargantuan sun can be visually obscured by the moon, which is a tiny 0.2% of its size. But the relative distances of these two heavenly bodies from Earth, coupled with their unusually exquisite roundness, make the perfect solar eclipse possible. So I mentioned the fact that the moon could cover the sun, but also the planets are really round. And then also it says here, this has proven quite helpful to scientists who are trying to unriddle the mysteries of the universe. Hundreds of years ago, a perfect eclipse helped observers confirm that stars are composed of gas. More recently, an eclipse helped verify the theory of relativity, showing that light is bent by the sun's gravity. That we see a perfect eclipse gave us our first glimpses of the sun's gaseous chromosphere, which has yielded additional insights about the stars. So a perfect eclipse means that you can just barely see the edges of the sun around the moon, and that actually helped us see that the sun has gases and fireballs pretty much being thrown off of it.
Yeah, because otherwise you can't even see it. It's just too bright and too overwhelming. It's amazing. You stand there and you see this eclipse and you think about what God reveals about himself and the way he looks, and that it is like the sun and its full strength shining. And you think about all of that and some of that amazing science you read about how things have to be just so for all this to work, as far as the Earth's position and the moon and everything. And you mean to tell me that just came out of nowhere? Oh, wow, we lucked out, won the lottery a billion times over. Mm-hmm. When you see that, you've got to go back and say, wait a second, who made that? This being whose face shines like the sun, he can make that. He can make suns because he shines like a sun.
Yes, and not only do we have the millions and millions of factors necessary on this Earth for life, but as far as I understand, I don't think you actually need a solar eclipse to happen to sustain life on the planet. But we're able to see it. We're in the perfect spot to view it. Clearly, beyond just having our necessities here on this planet, we're also able to see up in the universe and what's out there in some of the most stunning emotional ways possible. God wants us to look up at night. That booklet I was talking about mentions that as well. It's not just that we're able to survive here and even thrive, but we're also able to view what's out there and what our future is out in the universe.
Yeah, and again, I mean, there are passages there in the New Testament that talk about God is proved by the creation that he made. You know, if people say, well, is there a God, isn't there? Well, take a look. Learn more about the science of things, and then ask yourself some logical questions. And there's more proof than that, but that's a one way to look at it. Does anyone believe that just happened? You know, Mr. Armstrong made a great analogy that he wrote up many years ago about, you know, if you find a watch, nobody comes up to you and says, oh, boy, just kind of came out. The sand came up and made a crystal for the thing, and then it started keeping perfect time. You know, you go tell somebody that, and they would put you into the insane asylum.
They would, right.
But yet, this perfect clock, this perfect universe that we cannot control but we can look at, we say, well, it just came from nowhere.
Yeah, and apparently these people conveniently neglect that that's actually scientifically impossible, that it could all just come about from nothing at all. Like, I guess they say it all comes from a tiny particle and then suddenly it exploded or something like that, and then the whole universe came into existence. But that particle also must come from something. That thing that has the life in it, that tiny particle, also must come from life, which is the law of biogenesis. And they never get back to the very root and core of it, because if they did, they'd have to acknowledge that there is someone in charge of all this, and they have to obey. You can just see that evolution is Satan's greatest weapon for just stirring people up into rebellion against God.
Yeah, and I think when we see something like the eclipse, I think one of the things maybe that makes it so emotional for people is that we do kind of realize how small we are, like how powerless we are. You can have scientists that are peddling evolution, and they sound very official. Well, stand there and look at that eclipse. And it made me laugh yesterday because I was watching some of the coverage, and a cloud moved in front of where they were trying to watch the total eclipse. And the crowd started booing and yelling. This guy was yelling, "Go away!" And I just thought, well, come on. I don't think the cloud listens to you, sir. Like, I mean, we can't control these things. They were booing the clouds, and then they all started yelling, "Go away," as if that would do anything. And I know they were just frustrated, but it made me kind of laugh because we are so small. We can't control something like that. Yet some people try to say it came from nothing, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I actually, on that NASA live stream, I heard some of the reporters remarking that they could even, through the clouds, see what was going on up there. And that just shows you, again, the power of what was happening and how it did, in a lot of cases, seem to pierce through the clouds. So hopefully those people weren't too upset by it because they could still see something. But like you said, we are really puny. I actually have this article from, I think it was from the Los Angeles Times. Yeah, that's right. And it's called "A Total Eclipse of the Sun is a Reason to Unplug." And the second paragraph of that just talks about that as well. It's pretty humorous here. It says, "It may be tempting to read the solar eclipse as a message from a vexed Mother Nature or a physical manifestation of the current state of political strife, but the celestial bodies of this vast and ever-expanding universe are indifferent to our petty mortal concerns. Their movement is regulated by powerful and immutable forces, which periodically make themselves visible with a bit of dramatic flair when the sun, the moon, and the earth line up in just the right way." So that just, again, it points out how we have no power over what goes on out there, and yet sometimes we think that we are the ultimate authority on things when we can't do anything about the environment around us, really.
Yeah, and even that point there about some of the petty human affairs. Now, I mean, you see the like the racial divisions and other political divisions in the U.S., but when everybody stops and looks up at these amazing celestial bodies moving, I think you think, well, what are we mad about? Like, you know, we can't control the movement of the stars. We can't control the race we were born. We can't control any of those things. And yet we're going to sit here and have these arguments over things that are beyond our control instead of taking a step back. I think really, you know, I don't know exactly why eclipses occur, but I think it wouldn't be too far of a guess to say, well, maybe God's just kind of given us a reminder of how powerful he is. We can see something he made doing something amazing. And maybe we should step back and think about the being that created that.
I did think it was refreshing, at least, to hear some people issuing calls for unity because of something like that. And just the magnitude of it and how much bigger it is than what is happening on Earth. That I think people, regardless of their beliefs or their backgrounds, could come together and enjoy an experience like that. And it is pointing them to their creator, whether they realize it or not. And this article even concludes with a call to action, and it says, "This is an opportunity to collectively disengage from the societal noise and experience something extraordinary. Join a viewing party or make one of your own. It does not matter where or who you are. This spectacle is available to everyone. Just step outside and look up with the proper protective eyewear, of course, at this rare and natural wonder that, for a few moments at least, can put all our worries, fears, and annoyances into their proper puny perspective."
You know what's so funny about that is I read another headline today saying that one of the big problems at some of these places in the path of totality was that people were trying to take selfies and getting in everybody's way.
Right.
I thought, well, isn't this a time to not maybe take a picture of yourself? Like, there is something happening up there that's pretty amazing. And I understand, you know, hey, I'd like to take a picture, you know, of the family on the eclipse day. I get that. But it is just interesting that still people were very much focused on themselves being there instead of taking a second to, you know, look up and really put away the selfies for just a second. We got it. You were there. We were all there. Right? It is interesting, man. That's maybe one of man's problems, right? We have a tendency to look at ourselves and look down and not pay attention to what's going on from above too often.
That's a great point. Just the fact that we can be so short-sighted and not really be thinking big enough. You know, I think a big problem for probably most people on the entire earth is that we just tend to think too small, or we put these ridiculous limits on ourselves. And yet God is pretty much yelling at us that we can go take the universe if we want to. And we say, oh, that's not possible. We can't be gods. We're going to go up to heaven and strum a harp and do nothing. But we can't be gods. That's blasphemy. We can't actually have a purpose for the afterlife.
Yeah, and that raises this really interesting question of Okay, so what does an eclipse have to do with mankind, or what God looks like have to do with mankind? Well, it's fascinating, and here in the first chapter of Revelation, again, there's this vision of what God looks like. Now, John didn't see this for real. He saw it in vision. I mean, he saw it for real, but in a vision. Otherwise, he wouldn't have survived to tell us. But he talks about what God looks like. You know, people say, oh, what? You know, I don't know much about God. Well, this is what he looks like. It describes it. And he looks like us. We look like him. He looks like a human being. Or more accurately, human beings look like God. He talks about his face shining like the sun at its full strength, eyes like a flame of fire. That always kind of blows me away. The sun is so bright and fiery, but you can see eyes that look like fire. Like, how bright is the fire in the fire? That's always kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, you would think the eyes are probably several times brighter than the rest of the face. I mean, if you just look at our eyes, they stand out from our face in a big way as well. So that is pretty much how God would look if we are fashioned after him.
And so what did John do? The natural thing here in verse 17, he saw him, he fell over like he was dead. You know, I mean, you look at the way people would just feel emotionally about an eclipse. What if you saw God in vision? Nobody's seen anything like this. You'd just fall over.
Well, remember, Israel was trying to run away from Moses after he just saw God. So the guy who saw God was so terrifying to the entire nation. And here, if you actually see him even in a vision, you fall over like dead. And that's just another example of just the glory of it, just the splendor. And I think in a lot of ways that just makes us feel uncomfortable because we don't understand all the aspects of the spirit realm.
Well, and too, if you think about the way that, say, people don't depict God the Father, I've never seen anything like that, but they do depict Christ, of course, a lot, and as a human, and they, you know, show these different pictures of him. And the thing is, this is the glorified Christ looks like this, this Revelation 1 God. This is what we're looking at here. But they see this human, which is, of course, in the paintings, very weak and effeminate. And that's a little more comfortable vision for people because, yes, that's God, but he's kind of being looked at like, he's a nice guy, he's your buddy, and all that. But we're talking about a powerful being here that can create and move planets. And this is what he looks like. People are uncomfortable with that. But the exciting thing about it is that he's offering that same potential to mankind. And that's what's talked about in this book, The Incredible Human Potential, which is at thetrumpet.com. It's free.
I never actually thought about that before, the fact that we tend to minimize Christ's physical appearance. And it probably a lot of that does have to do with fear or an inferiority complex. Just at least if he's scrawny, we could say, well, you know, we're bigger than that, or whatever it is. If he's not the best looking, we could be better looking. But really, in every way, Christ is better than we are. We just don't want to acknowledge that a lot of the time. He was a rugged, hardworking man. I mean, he's probably stronger than anyone just because he was in perfect physical condition his whole life.
Yeah, and then he's glorified today. He's not you see a lot of the baby in the manger, and then you see a lot of the crucified, weak Christ. You don't hear a lot about the glorified Christ. And of course, those depictions in a lot of cases of him on this earth aren't correct either.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to get into physical depictions. The Bible doesn't leave any room for that. But the focus should be on this glorified Christ. And what's so exciting about it is in 1 John 3:2, it says, "Beloved, now we are the sons of God, if we're led by God's Spirit." And it says, it doesn't yet appear what we shall be. Like, we don't see it yet. We see each other, but we don't see what we're going to look like. But it continues. It says, but we know that when he shall appear, when Christ returns, we shall be like him. We shall see him as he is. Moses couldn't see him as he was. Why? Because he was a human. But it says we're going to be like him. We're going to be able to see him as he is, be able to look into that face and not be obliterated. So what does that make us? Well, it's pretty fascinating. It makes us gods as well.
Exactly. And that I really love that conversation that Christ had with Nicodemus in John chapter 3, where Nicodemus just couldn't understand how a human being could be born a second time, which is what it takes. If we can see God, if we can inherit the kingdom of God and all these different things, we have to actually be spirit beings like God is, which is pretty hard for us to comprehend sometimes. And you mentioned those symbols that we remember Christ by in society now. They're just the ultimate insult because, I mean, someone pointed out to me, and I didn't even really think of it this way, but the manger that Christ was in, it was just like a trough from which pigs eat slop. people act like it was this perfect little carriage for a baby to go around in. No, he was born in a barn and he was put in a little slop trough, and that's how people remember Christ, or they remember him. Speaking of the obsession with death, they remember him bloodied and on a cross. But that just implies that, well, there's nothing else. It ended right there, and he's not doing anything today. And if we think of him that way, then what's the point of having a relationship with God if he's not even alive or doing anything?
Well, there's not a lot that's appealing about that image that the world has, because if you look at religion, in a lot of cases, you think, well, okay, you know, be nice, I guess. You know, soft and gentle, and there is time for that, of course. But you don't hear enough people in religion talking about the glorified Christ, and what is he doing today? Is he doing something? Is he does he have a purpose? Does he have a goal for mankind? Do you have to follow him? And when we say follow him, I mean, we're not talking about the weak baby or the other. We're talking about the glorified vision here in Revelation 1. That will get your attention, and that's something to be encouraged by and be excited about. There's power in that. It's not this sort of, you know, feel-goodery, as it were.
Right, and you mentioned how soft traditional Christianity is. It seems like, in this country at least, they get pushed around more than anyone does, because it's like they're always being accused of bigotry just simply for having a general belief in what is right and wrong. And they just change like chameleons, and they go right along with whatever it is. Like, oh, well, we're trying to be more accepting toward homosexuality in this church, or, you know, whatever the issue might be. We're trying to talk about whether abortion could be okay in some situations. Well, why are you changing all the time? Why are you just trying to be so soft and accommodating, really, in those cases, toward evil? You're just letting whatever filth you feel like into the church, because you're distorting it and saying that's what Christ would do. And yet, if you contrast that with this church, the Philadelphia Church of God, for example, we don't get pushed around, because if you look at even the court case, we fought for 6 years, and then Christ won a miracle for us to get Mr. Armstrong's writings. If you think of a traditional Christian church in a court case like that, I don't think that they would have even started the court case to begin with, and they probably would have been trying to back down every chance they got.
You see, when you look at the real Christ, and of course, then God the Father as well, but with Christ, you see incredible power. You see the example in the book of Joshua, when you know, they were going to go and take the promised land, and there you have he sees a soldier with a sword drawn, and he goes up to, of course, it was the word at the time, manifested as a man. He, are you for us or for you against us? Joshua says. And he tells him, you know, he was the captain of the host. And Joshua knew who that was and what that meant. He wasn't soft. He wasn't, you know, he had a sword.
Yeah.
And so you look at that and you see the power here, and it's amazing. And again, if you look at this book, The Incredible Human Potential, and there's a lot to look at, but one chapter 12 says, talks about our transcendental potential, transcendent potential. And the title of the chapter is There Life After Death? That's a huge question people have. Is there life after death? What happens to you? Like you mentioned, do you become like this angel sort of? Or if you're bad, do you go to hell? I mean, what happens? This talks about what man becomes, and it has everything to do with this powerful God that is described in Revelation 1.
Yeah, and that is really the question. I actually got asked what people in this church believe about that a couple months ago. And obviously my answer was pretty surprising to this woman, because I talked about how we believe in three separate resurrections, and how when people die, they're actually dead, and they're all in the grave, just still dead. And the next second of their consciousness, they'll be alive, and it will be like they were never dead in the first place. But I always thought that so strange that so many people comfort themselves by thinking, well, the very next second after death, people are already up in heaven and looking down on them at all times.
Yep.
For one thing, I don't really know if I'd want all of my relatives to see everything I've done in my whole life.
Right.
I don't think I'd be too proud of all those things. But at the same time as well, they're up there doing nothing, apparently, sitting on clouds and lounging around, and apparently that's a bigger comfort than an eternal future, and almost like they never died in the first place if you're thinking of just their consciousness.
Right. I mean, it gets right back to the way a lot of people think about religion. There's not a lot that's appealing about it. You know, I get nobody, I guess people like to live forever. We'd like to live forever. And I guess the idea of heaven sounds comfortable. But if you had to do it physically, you'd be bored out of your mind, of course. Like, yeah, I'll just sit here. There's a lot more to it than that. And again, I think there's so much that's been done to try to make religion boring and sort of pointless and not exciting. But when you look at what it really is and what God's plan really is, there's nothing more exciting than that.
Exactly. And obviously, religion in this country, now it seems like it's scorned more than almost anything else, and probably honestly for good reason. And unless you're talking about the one true religion, there's only one true religion. There's only one set of doctrines and beliefs that are correct. But sadly, people dismiss all religion when they see people professing one thing to seem righteous and then doing the exact opposite of what they say. You know, the hypocrisy in a lot of religion turns people off, and yet God does expect people to do things, does expect them to obey and to try to improve themselves instead of just thinking anything goes.
Yeah, and when you look at a lot of these writings from Herbert Armstrong and then, of course, from Gerald Fleury as well, you see a very straightforward approach where scriptures are put together and they make sense. You read them and that's what it says. And if you read this chapter here in The Incredible Human Potential on Is There Life After Death, there's real hope in that. And Mr. Armstrong lays out a lot of very basic scriptures, but puts them all together and just says, look, are you willing to just believe what the Bible says on this? I know you've heard a lot of other things, but are you willing to just believe what the Bible says? And that's what he does in this book, looks at those scriptures.
Yeah, and it is amazing to think of what the Bible talks about. You mentioned the spirit being with the sword, and obviously just the amount of times that warfare is talked about in the Bible and showing that either you're on his side or you're not. And then, of course, the fact that there is a huge purpose and a lot of power that would be given to people who are living right and want to obtain the future that God is offering. There is a lot that is so much more inspiring to it than what you would hear from a lot of other messages. It's a matter of just simply, though, reading the Bible and actually believing what it says, which is very hard for people to do. And Mr. Armstrong said nearly everyone who reads the Bible just injects their own preconceived notions into it instead of actually taking it for face value.
Yeah. I mean, he quotes, Mr. Armstrong quotes here in this chapter in Incredible Human Potential, Revelation 3:21, which says, where Christ says, to him that overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am now set down with my Father in his throne. So, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean to sit with Christ on his throne? What is he going to do? You know, other passages say that he rules the nations. He rules the world. So we're talking about real government, real rule, real, you know, cities and areas that have to be dealt with properly. And he says, Mr. Armstrong says, yes, there is a life after death for those obedient to God, a spirit life of incredible potential beyond our wildest dreams. Can we humans grasp the awesome portent of these astounding truths? Attaining immortal life should be our all-encompassing goal. And I think for a lot of people in religion, they don't know what the goal is. I mean, what's the goal? Heaven, I guess? But no, there's a much, much greater vision than that laid out here in The Incredible Human Potential, but it requires action in this life.
Yeah, Mr. Armstrong wrote about that in his booklet, The Seven Laws of Success, how people, they'll have a goal for anything. I mean, if you're talking about planning a vacation, you'll say, well, I want to go to England, so I'm going to look into buying tickets there. I'm going to study the sites there to see that, to make sure that I have a plan for while I'm there to get to do as much as possible. But yet when it comes to their own lives, it's like we're just buffeted about by circumstance and we don't really know what the end result is supposed to be. And even a lot of people who set goals of attaining status and fame and money achieve those things and still aren't happy for some reason. So that just goes to show that there's something a whole lot deeper than that. There has to be more than just attaining physical riches in this life.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you look at the eclipse that happened, you know, here recently, a lot of people planned for that. You know, they drove many miles and spent a lot of money because they knew this event was going to happen. It was only going to last for a couple of minutes, but they wanted to see it. And how much effort, it's a good question for all of us to ask, how much effort do we put into the rest of eternity? Not a lot sometimes because it's distracting in this world. But when you get into this book, Incredible Human Potential, and you start to look at what the future is going to be for man, if he chooses it, it changes the priorities in a good way in your life.
And like you said, it is tough to look into that, but that's really the fundamental question. It's what really all education that we have should be teaching. You know, what is man's purpose? What are we doing here on earth of all places instead of being somewhere else out there? Why are we physical? Why can we die? Even though people believe in the immortal soul, that's not true. But why is it that we are here? That's something that is so fundamental and simple, and yet people would probably laugh you out of the classroom if you tried to teach that, even though it's the most basic thing you could ever know.
Yeah, and these bigger questions about what happens to a person after they die, and then, you know, what does this all-powerful God do with them? In the scriptures showing that he brings them into a family. It's easy to just not care too much about it or think too much about it until you start to get to the end of your days. And then people start thinking more about, you see that all the time. Somebody can live a pretty bad life. And then right at the end, they're like, I need somebody to, you know, come talk to me about what's going to happen. And a lot of times they don't get satisfactory answers. You can get those answers here at the Incredible Human Potential. You can get them right now.
Right. That reminded me of Emperor Constantine at the end of his life. Obviously, he converted to Catholicism instead, but he still had the same thing where, oh, well, I've done all these things and I want to change now. Why not do it now? Why not, like you talked about with assisted suicide, why not just address problems now, find the answers now instead of putting it off to the end?
Yeah, this life is a time to grow, and if you don't do it in this life, you can't do it right at the end at the old deathbed, as it were. Incredible book, literally, The Incredible Human Potential. Check it out. It's at thetrumpet.com, and it is free. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. For myself, Dwight Falk, and for Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.